It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Stanton, in for Ben Kiefer. It's Politics Wednesday on the program today, our weekly roundtable of discussion about what's in the news of politics for this week. And on our program today, we'll be talking about the politics of immigration. We'll want you to join our conversation and tell us what you think. How are politicians handling the situation? Most people call it a crisis. If so, what kind of crisis is the immigration situation? Now, when we talk about first I should introduce my guest. Donna Hoffman is chair of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. Thank you, Donna, for being with us today.
Hi, Ben. It's a pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you on. And Chris Larimer, associate professor of political science at University of Northern Iowa. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
Well, we have been hearing about the sudden rise in especially the unaccompanied minors coming across the U.S. border from Central American countries. The New York Times has reported that Honduras has the world's highest murder rate. Guatemalans face rural areas with extreme poverty. And so children from those countries and also El Salvador are traveling a very long distance under dangerous conditions to reach the U.S. And also, again, from the New York Times, the Department of Homeland Security has acknowledged that because so many minors caught in the past few years were reunited with their families here and not immediately deported, many Central Americans were left with the perception that the United States was allowing children to stay. Well, we have a number of topics to get to in the larger context of immigration and politics, but let's start right here in Iowa. Iowa U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley's office has said that officials on Tuesday updated a number, 139 children in Iowa that have come to the U.S. Through that immigration process, and that's children released to sponsors in Iowa, but that does not address minors who may have been sent to larger facilities. Well, Republican Governor Terry Branstad has used his weekly news conference Monday to reiterate his stand that he does not support bringing migrant children from the border to Iowa.
I'm very empathetic for these teenagers and kids, but they've come here illegally. And it would be wrong for us to send a signal, if you come here illegally, we're going to just disperse you throughout the country and you don't have to go home. That is, the country can't afford that. And I'm not the only governor that's taken that stand. The governor of Colorado, the governor of Maryland, very strong Democrats, have, as well as a lot of other Republican governors, our neighboring governor from Nebraska, Governor Heineman, and obviously the border state governors like Governor Perry, have the biggest direct problem that they have to deal with. But the problem has been caused by the federal government and the administration's unwillingness or inability to secure the border and protect American citizens against the influx of illegals.
Well, we'll talk a little more about Texas Governor Rick Perry later in the program. But Terry Branstad's stance has drawn criticism from religious groups and Democrats like Davenport Mayor Bill Gluba.
And that's not America. That's not the way we treat people in need. You know, I go back to the parable of the Good Samaritan, you know, and that's appropriate. That's the right thing to do, to treat people the way you would want to be treated. What if it was your grandchildren, my grandchildren, leaving and fleeing a persecuted situation? You want people to welcome them with, you know, warmly and open hands and hearts. And I think people in Iowa and Davenport feel that way.
So now, as we said, we have news. More than 100 children already have been relocated to live with extended family in Iowa. So let's turn to our political analysts now. How much authority does the governor have to say, don't bring these children to Iowa? Donna Hoffman.
Well, obviously not a lot, given that apparently 139 of them are here. But, you know, I think what Governor Branstad perhaps was talking about was to be having some kind of shelter or kind of collective point within the state, that he didn't want to have that in the state because there are so many children that they have been having to use military bases. Most of them are closer to the border to kind of house these unaccompanied minors in the interim before they can find a sponsor, do the things that the law right now says that have to be done. And so I kind of took his remarks to be saying that we're not interested, or he's not interested in the state of Iowa, in hosting kind of a collective group of these children. you know, then it turns out that the process for that the Department of Human Services uses as they have these students in their children in their custody is to release them because they don't have the facilities, they don't have the money to collectively house them until they get this deportation hearing that that by law right now they're entitled to. And these, you know, children may be seeking asylum, and that's another thing that we can talk about later on. And that's a process, and this 2008 law that you referred to earlier, how that process works is spelled out in the law. And so, you know, the governor doesn't have a lot of control in terms of where those people are placed because that's being something that's being done by the Department of Human Services at the federal level.
That's right. Well, we do hear, you know, the phrase rule of law, and we have laws. We should follow them. I think that's some of what he's saying, and part of another quote from Terry Branstad that he says we do need to follow those rules and that we have a delicate balance of being compassionate and supportive. So, Chris Larimer, when we hear a quote like that from Terry Branstad, who is he speaking to?
Well, I think he's certainly speaking to potential midterm voters. He's speaking to Republicans. I mean, the larger issue here is that this statement sort of falls along the lines of, you know, federal encroachment, or at least the federal government stepping on what state governments want to do, and that is that the federal government mandating something that the states are going to have an extraordinarily complicated time dealing with. And, you know, that's almost a bipartisan issue where you have Democratic and Republican governors lining up saying, you know, enough is enough. The federal government has many times on many other issues mandated state governments to do certain things that end up costing states much more than they initially anticipated. And with the issue of immigration, as complex as it is, I think you see what Governor Branstad is talking about is really trying to get the federal government away from mandating something that that the states really don't have a plan for dealing with, at least at the moment. And so I think he's speaking to you know, individual voters who are maybe more skeptical of the federal government. If you want to think about this in terms of electoral politics, you know, this is a midterm election coming up. We know that the midterm electorate is generally different, than a presidential electorate, and generally you have older, more conservative voters who tend to be more skeptical of government. So I think that could be part of that statement.
Right. So is he? Is he specifically framing the issue in that way, or are we left to kind of imply that that's what he's saying? As far as you know, the federal government causing the states to have to deal with things. Is he specifically doing that, or is he leaving that for us to interpret?
I think he's leaving that for us to interpret at the moment. But I mean, he's certainly trying to draw a line and trying to draw a distinction that that is different from what the federal government is doing, and implying that, you know, that he's different from what the administration wants at this point.
Okay, I want to take a moment to again reach out to our listeners and ask you how you think this issue is being handled, either here in Iowa or nationally. We're talking about immigration and the politics of immigration. 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, or tweet us at IPRTalk. Well, continuing on with talking about Terry Branstad. Now, what do we know about Terry Branstad and immigration? Is this an issue he's directly dealt with before, and do we know how he feels about immigration in general? Chris Larimer?
I'm not sure if we know about it specifically, but I think we can go back to his time when he was lieutenant governor for Governor Robert Ray. I mean, a lot of the statements that have come out criticizing Governor Branstad's stance on this harken back to what Governor Ray did with the South Vietnamese refugees in the late 1970s. And this was a time when Terry Branstad was moving up in the Republican ranks. He would ultimately serve as lieutenant governor the last 4 years Ray was in office. And it was during that time that Governor Ray set up, you know, what we now have as far as the Iowa Bureau of Refugee Services, and allowed tens of thousands of refugees from Southeast Asia into the state of Iowa. A lot of people like to draw that comparison. I'm not sure if you can actually do that. If you look back to when Governor Ray started to do that, this was something that actually was started at the federal level, where you had President Ford urging governors to help with relocating refugees from Southeast Asia. Governor Ray took that upon himself to do that, initiated that in Iowa. It continued through into the Carter administration, But this was a time that was very different in terms of the politics of immigration. It wasn't as polarizing as it is today. The policies on immigration are much more complex today. They were more open in the late 1970s. So it's a very, very different political environment for Branstad to be dealing with it now than when he was probably first looking at it in the late 1970s, dealing with the refugees that Governor Ray was allowing into the state.
So it sounds like you say that not just that the situation itself was different, but just the political context was also it was a different time.
Yeah, political context was different, and the policies were very different.
And Ben, if I
go
could
ahead,
add,
Donna Hoffman.
One of the things that Branstad is looking at this, one of the lenses he's looking at this crisis through, is that it's an immigration crisis. The other frame that one could use would be that it's a refugee crisis. And we, as this debate is developing over these unaccompanied minors, we increasingly see the partisan camps, the ideological camps, aligning with that. It's an immigration crisis. If it's an immigration crisis, then not enough is being done at the border to stop the inflow of these children. They're seeking their economic migrants. They're seeking to come to the United States to improve their economic position. Those using the other kind of frame, though, that no, this is really a humanitarian or more of a refugee crisis, will be pointing to the fact that these children are fleeing these very dangerous conditions in these Central American countries where primarily they're coming from. They're fleeing persecution. It's a humanitarian crisis. And then there needs to be a humanitarian response. And part of that is having these children come into the system that's in place. And, you know, if it is truly a humanitarian crisis, then there's the potential for these people seeking asylum in the United States. And so those frames were kind of different in the 1970s, and it was seen as being a refugee crisis, not an immigration crisis. And there's, you know, I think various reasons for that. But increasingly, as this debate is going forward right now in the United States, it's being put into that frame. And then also you have the ideological camps kind of sorting into those two frames.
Again, our guest today, Donna Hoffman, Chair of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa, and Chris Larimer, Associate Professor of Political Science at University of Northern Iowa as well. And we're talking about immigration. You can join us at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org, or tweet us at IPR Talk. And I just wanted, Donna Hoffman, wanted to go back to what we were talking about before, about the difference of what was happening during Robert Ray's administration and what's happening now. Of course, in the aftermath of the Vietnam War, political situation was different. Can you characterize how is it different? Why is there a different political context now?
Well, I mean, you know, that was on the—I mean, after we pulled out of Vietnam, Saigon collapses. Many people in the south of Vietnam, also in Laos, also in Cambodia, are wanting to flee that region. They're taking to boats. I mean, oftentimes we refer to the people coming to the United States during this era as boat people. So they were mounting these rickety crafts in the ocean. Lots of them lost their lives. It was a humanitarian response that the United States had that, as Chris mentioned, you know, President Ford asked governors to take in these people, and Governor Ray responded to that. It was also in the framework of the Cold War, and also in the framework of what had happened in Vietnam, and that we had pulled out. The region was very destabilized. You know, you had a reign of terror of Pol Pot going on in Cambodia, and there was a lot of attention given to that. There's, I think, less attention right now given to the conditions in Central America. It has not been front page news in terms of the things that have been ongoing. I mean, it's always been there. The problem, I think, in Central America is these problems that the region is encountering politically. It's very unstable, have been going on for decades. The drug war has affected this. You know, we have drug gangs, cartels down there. It's become very dangerous, we know, for children. But it's not been the same kind of sensationalized front page news that I think that you had in the late 70s, when you could see the dramatic footage of these boats and these people hanging onto the sides and being rescued and that kind of thing. But also the time frame is different in terms of the Cold War is not a factor in this right now either.
866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. And let's see if we can go to a caller now. Let's see if we can take Jenny. Jenny is calling us from I-80. Jenny, go ahead.
Yes, I'm. I have a Latino center in Red Oak, Iowa. It's called the Southwest Iowa Latino Resource Center. So I work very directly with immigrants. I hear their stories. I want to build upon what your guest said about that we are not remotely focusing enough on what's really going on in these countries, nor are we focusing enough on the United States' involvement in these problems that are causing these children to take these risky journeys. It's at least as risky for them to stay where they are. We always say, it's so dangerous, don't come here. Well, it's dangerous where they are, too, so, you know, take your chances. So I really would like to see us focusing more on how NAFTA has played into this, how the war on drugs has played into this. We're talking about spending billions of dollars to process these children, which they deserve because President Bush passed the law that allows them these rights, which is fantastic. But we could be spending billions of dollars helping economies grow in these countries so children and families wouldn't need to come to the United States in the first place. Thank you.
Jenny, thank you very much for that phone call. And Donna Hoffman, what do we know about how we're treating these issues? This turns to a sort of a foreign policy, but how much control and how much looking back to previous decades and build up, how has that played into this issue?
Well, I mean, we have a long history of being involved in this part in this region. It's often been seen as, you know, our back door, America's back door. And in the 1980s in particular, Reagan was very cognizant of using American foreign policy in this region to fight communist incursions, which he again kind of termed as, you know, this is the communists creeping into our backyard. And the United States did a lot of things to destabilize what were democratically elected governments in this region, but happened to be socialist leaning or communist leaning. And that battle destabilized many of these areas. We also began the war on drugs, you know, prior to that as well. Illegal drugs flowing into this country have come from this region, and the appetite, if you will, for drugs, for illegal drugs in this country has fueled some of the instability here as well. And it has kind of snowballed into, you know, from all accounts, the conditions in these three Central American countries, Honduras and El Salvador and Guatemala, where most of these unaccompanied minors are coming from, are horrendous. They're being targeted by drug gangs. Their families are being targeted by drug gangs if they don't join. There's human trafficking going on. And this is not a problem where the root causes happened quickly or that they happened recently. And it's not one root cause. It's many. It's kind of a Gordian knot of problems in that particular region of the world. And one of the things that policy in the United States needs to address if they're going to deal with this problem in any kind of way that looks at the long term is to look at the root causes and to encourage these countries to improve the conditions there. You know, one of the things that in this area of the world that is a factor is that we have had migrants coming to the United States, oftentimes making money, sending money home. And that helps those economies. It helps the economy of Mexico. It helps the economy of these areas. It's not insignificant, the amount of money that workers in the United States send home to their home countries. And so there hasn't always been the discouragement of doing this. You know, these migrants that are coming from these three countries are coming through Mexico, and they're riding on the top, by a lot of accounts, many of them, are riding on the top of this freight train that's been called the Beast. Mexico is not doing enough to stem that, to discourage the migration into their own country before they get to the United States borders. And those are things that the United States, with foreign aid, with education programs about what U.S. policy really is, that it is dangerous to take this trick. You know, these are children. The children are being told things. They're being targeted by the mules that bring them, you know, bring drugs across, that bring humans across and get paid for it. They're not always able to discern what is fact from fiction. And there's a lot that can be done to try to address and get at the root causes of what is causing these children and the families of these children to try to seek better fortunes here.
Okay, we'll be talking more about federal policy in the second half of our show. But before we end this half of the show, let's see if we can return to Iowa with Rick calling. Rick from Ames. Go ahead, Rick.
Hi. The governor says that these children are breaking the law, and he's portraying this as an enforcement problem, and he says we need more enforcement on the border. But what we're being told is that these women and children are presenting themselves to the Customs and Border Patrol asking to be taken in for whatever reason. I just wonder if the governor would be willing to fund the immigration courts at a higher level so they can deal more quickly with these cases to decide who really is a refugee and who needs to go back to their home country.
Okay. Thank you, Rick, for that phone call. Chris Larimer, I'm not sure if Governor Branstad would be the person to make that kind of policy change, but has he gotten that subtle in his responses?
Well, this would not be in Governor Branstad's hands. This is still a federal issue. But, I mean, if the governor was really a proponent of such a policy, what he would do is use the governor's association or talk to other governors to sort of mobilize support for pushing for more funds for more immigration judges to deal with these cases in a more efficient way. But to this point, the governor does not seem intent on doing that.
Okay, very good. Rick, thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate that. You can call us at 866-780-9100. And we'll squeeze in one more phone call here before we take a break. Kay is calling from Coralville. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm just really upset with the discussion about this from the politicians and the media. These children are not illegals. They have not been to court yet. They're being said to be criminals before they've even been to a hearing. This kind of sloppy talk is how we got into the Iraq War.
Okay.
Not right.
Thank you, Kay, for that phone call. Interesting point. Yes, if we look at it from the point of innocent till proven guilty, but I'm not sure if that's what these courts are deciding or how that plays out. But Donna Hoffman, do you want to react to that?
Well, the policy as it stands now from this, again, 2008 law that we've referred to several times, is that the unaccompanied minors get their day in court, so to speak. They get a hearing. Part of that hearing can be to address claims if they are fleeing persecution, which would then potentially entitle them to asylum status here in the United States. And so that's part of following the law as it is now, is giving them these hearings, and it takes time.
Okay. Donna Hoffman is chair of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. Chris Larimer is also with us, associate professor of political science at UNI. And we'll be talking more about lots of other things, like Governor Rick Perry, as we mentioned before. There's some polling about how Americans are reacting to immigration and this particular immigration issue. We want to hear from you, though. Call us at 866-780-9100. Email rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back after a short break. This is Iowa Public Radio. Glad you're with us on River to River from Iowa Public Radio. It's Politics Day, or Politics Wednesday, our regular show where we talk about what's in the news of politics, and we're talking about immigration. In particular, we've been hearing about that rise of unaccompanied minors coming across the southern border, mostly from Central American countries like El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras. And we're joined by Donna Hoffman, chair of political science at the University of Northern Iowa, and Chris Larimer, associate professor of political science at UNI. And we're asking you to give us a call and give us your opinion. 866-780-9100. How is this issue being handled? Do you see it as something that may play out in the November elections as well? And that's something we'll get to here in just a minute. Again, you can call 866-780-9100. But we'll start this half of the program talking about some congressional races in Iowa. Republican Congressman Steve King has been very vocal on the issue of immigration, and he opposed the Senate compromise on immigration reform and has advocated for building a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. Here's what he said in an interview on July 10 with Fox News host Bill O'Reilly when asked whether he would support President Obama's request for $3.7 billion in funding to address the crisis.
I'm not going to vote to approve $3.7 billion for the president to hire more lawyers and to squander it in the way that he has designed. There's nothing in this that actually secures the border. And until we stop the bleeding at the border, Bill, we're not going to solve this
problem.
All
right, but what about the kids? What about the kids now? I've got 60,000 of them. Some of them need help. You know, shouldn't Congress allocate some emergency funding for the children?
You know, I would look at that in that fashion, but when I look at the president's appropriation, that isn't really where this thing needs to go. I just want to insist that the president secure the border.
And his assertion that the budget request does nothing to secure the border was rated mostly false by the website PolitiFact. And in a taping of the IPTV program Iowa Press the next day, King's Democratic opponent in the November election, Jim Maurer, said King himself was at least partly to blame for the crisis.
There's a lot of blame to go around. But in many ways, he is responsible for this because he is against immigration reform. He spent the past few years going around and claiming that this administration is going to grant amnesty. And now he's surprised that people listen to him and they're trying to come to the United States.
So is immigration an issue that's likely to be a focus of this particular race? And let's go to Chris Larimer. So how will this play out? Is this something that that Steve King will be continuing to talk about, I imagine?
Yes, he will. This is an issue that Steve King has talked about for a long time. This is one of his sort of pet issues. He's talked about border security for a number of years, and he has taken a very strong stance against the Obama administration on this issue, on nearly every issue, I would say. So it's not surprising that he's talking about it. I think it'll continue to be an issue for his district, but Steve King is popular in his district, and if he can win in 2012 when you have probably a more Democratic-leaning electorate, he's going to win probably in 2014 in a midterm election. So I think this, you know, I haven't seen a lot of polling in Iowa talking about the importance of immigration for a likely Iowa voter for this November. But Steve King will continue to talk about this because this is one of the issues that he has tried to be out in front on, continuing to talk about border security as a way to reform immigration policy.
Right. So, Donna Hoffman, it's not as if Steve King is saying things that we are surprised to hear him say, but he is continuing to make it an issue he is focusing on.
Yes. And, you know, Steve King says a lot of provocative things about this issue that the national media pick up on. So he's very well known across the nation for talking about this particular issue. One of the things in this race, and I agree with Chris, I really don't think Steve King's in any kind of danger of not being reelected in 2014. But he has drawn a pretty interesting challenger in Jim Maurer, who has also raised a lot of money. Interestingly enough, for a race that is seen as leaning to the Republicans, he's raised, seven figures. And some of that is, in fact, from Democrats across the country who know Steve King and know the provocative things that he says on this issue. I'm certain of it because he's been able to garner some interesting fundraising numbers.
Very good. And we want to hear from River to River listeners. Call us at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. Chris Larimer, we're talking about Steve King and Jim Maurer and the fourth district, but there are four races in total in Iowa. Are we hearing other candidates talk about this?
I have not heard a lot of other candidates talking about it. We are obviously up in the first congressional district. This is not something that's come up a lot that I've seen in the race between Pat Murphy and Rod Blum for the first congressional district. And, you know, if it does, I would expect it to partly fall along party lines. That is, Murphy tending to take the more traditional Democratic stance, and Rod Blum maybe more likely to emphasize border security, but they haven't talked about it a lot yet. But it is a district that leans Democratic. So it's, if you compare that to the third congressional district, that tends to be more balanced in terms of party registration. Then I would expect the candidates in David Young and Stacey Apple to take maybe more nuanced stances that wouldn't be so much along the party lines. But I think if you're looking at the first congressional district, the second congressional district, those are races that tend to lean Democratic. You have an incumbent in the second congressional district that I do not see as vulnerable in Dave Loebsack. And so, if the issues do not come up, I would not be all that surprised.
Well, that's an interesting point you make. And so if there's not a compelling reason for a candidate to address the issue of immigration, it can be a dicey issue to discuss, and you can quickly polarize people. So are they going to be specifically avoiding it.
Well, I don't know if they'll be specifically avoiding it, but I think they'll be careful about it. And you have to remember, in the first congressional district, you have about 39% of the active registered voters in the district are registered as no party. That's more so than the other three. And so, you know, immigration policy, when it comes to independents, if you're worried about alienating that particular group of voters, then it's an issue you have to be very, very careful about talking about. But again, I would be surprised if it becomes a dominant issue in either the first or second congressional district, even though it is clearly a federal issue, and whoever is elected out of either one of those districts or the third district will have to deal with it at some point.
Okay, we've been asking for your calls, and let's take a call now. Susan from Cedar Rapids. Susan, can you turn on your radio quickly?
Hello.
Thank you.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. The other day, I was so proud of that mayor in Davenport for saying, we'll take children from Texas, you know, from the children that have been dropped off here. And I think that that is exactly how Iowans feel, and I hope that it costs Branstad the election.
Okay, Susan, thank you very much for the phone call. Let's go to another call, though. Let's quickly go to Greg on I-80. Greg, go ahead.
Hey, how are we doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Definitely thinking that my opinion is going to be controversial and probably not the mainstream, but I totally believe in what Rick Perry is doing. If you're bleeding to death, the first thing you want to do is stop the hemorrhaging, close the border. And I totally do not agree with the current resident of the White House telling the INS and everybody else to not enforce the existing laws. I think we should start by enforcing the existing laws, close the border. And additionally, when these children get to the United States, we immediately feed them, clothe them, provide them medical and everything else, including now lawyers for their hearings. If
okay.
I need food, I have to go work and earn it. If
Very good.
I need a place
Greg.
To live, I have to pay for it.
Greg, okay, Greg, thank you for the phone call. I think we get your point. Thank you for calling us. And I wanted to allow that to lead us into public opinion. Surely our callers' opinions are not unique. Many people hold them. But political opinion is split on the issue of immigration and this border crisis. But the number of people concerned about it has jumped. One of six Americans say that immigration issues now rank as the nation's most pressing problem. That's tripling in just 1 month. That's according to a recent Gallup poll released last week. And according to a Washington Post ABC News poll, 58% of those surveyed, including 54% of Latinos, said they disapproved of how the president has handled the issue of the Central American children at the border. But Obama may take some comfort in the poll. It found that 66% disapproved of how congressional Republicans were dealing with the issues. So, Donna Hoffman, immigration does come up perennially in our elections, but is this different now? And based on these numbers I've just read, are people looking at it differently now?
Well, there is a lot of attention to it. And so, you talked about that for 1 in 6, it's now the top issue. Well, for 5 in 6, it's not. And so we need to put it into proper perspective. Obama is not faring well on this issue. But then again, I'm not sure. There is no magic wand here. There is no magic policy that's going to fix this problem. It's a really protracted problem. He's faring better than, Republicans in Congress, as you mentioned. You can look at Obama's overall approval rating, and it's holding pretty steady at about 44%. So, oftentimes on these questions, polling entities will ask more detailed questions on specific policy like they've done with immigration right now. But, the number that typically we look at to kind of, gauge where the president is that overall presidential approval. And it's holding steady right now. So, what we can take away from those numbers is that very few people in the United States are happy with the situation that's occurring. And people view it differently. The previous caller said the problem is, the border's not being enforced. The laws aren't being enforced. People on the other side of the issue look at it in a different way. And so people disagree over what the solution is. We can all see that there's a problem there, but we'll disagree on the solution. And, Obama's not making a lot of people happy in terms of how he's dealing with it, but neither are congressional Republicans. And again, it's a really protracted problem, and there's not a magic wand to wave and fix it. It is going to take some really serious policy discussions in Washington, D.C. The congressional recess for August is coming up, and you know, there's money that both the House and the Senate are discussing that Obama has requested in terms of doing the things that have to be done to enforce the current law, which, again, is that you do, in fact, have to take these kids in. You do, in fact, have to figure out what you're going to do with them. You do have to clothe them and you do have to feed them. And then once they've had their hearing, then you can send them back, or then you deal with them in whatever the ends of that hearing were. So, again, which laws are being enforced and not enforced, people view that differently, and they're funneling that through their ideological lens. So this is not an issue that's going to win any policymaker at the moment a lot of fans.
Right, I see. So to use your image here, no politician will be able to wave a magic wand to fix the issue, but also they won't wave that same magic wand to win their election necessarily either.
Yes.
And then that goes from governor to president, I imagine.
Right. And you know, this is, I mean, one of the things that we can talk about is the state of comprehensive immigration reform in Congress. And it is dead. It is dead for the rest of the year. It's dead because of the election coming up. There's other factors that factor into that as well. But the Senate, a year ago plus, passed comprehensive immigration reform. It was bipartisan. They passed it overwhelmingly.
That's right.
Was up to the House to act. The House, and Boehner has told the president, point blank, we're not going to bring it up in 2014.
That's right. And that's been over a year now since that Senate bill was passed. It was 68-32. 14 Republicans crossed the aisle to vote with Democrats. And one of them was Senator Marco Rubio, part of that compromise bill that you're referring to. And we have a little audio here in an interview with NPR this week. Marco Rubio said that he only sees one scenario in which immigration reform is approved in the next decade.
And that is a three-step process that first involves border security. People have to believe that this problem is under control and not getting worse, and in fact is getting better. If that can be achieved, I think we can move to step two, which is modernizing our legal immigration system. And then the third step in this process, after you've done those two, is addressing what to do with 11 or 12 million human beings that are in this country illegally. That, I think, is the only process that has a chance, and it would have to happen in those three steps. I've been through this now. I was involved in the effort. I warned during that effort that I didn't think it did enough on this first element, the security front. I was proven, unfortunately, right by the fact that it didn't move in the House. And I now believe that it's very clear that if we are ever going to move on immigration reform, it will have to be in that sequence.
Well, how about we go to Chris Larimer on that? What's your reaction to Marco Rubio?
Well, I think, you know, the bill that they passed was that step in that direction. I mean, it was a plan that allowed for a 13-year plan to amnesty. It increased security measures, including over 700 miles of fence along the border. It allowed for improved tracking mechanisms, more border agents. So I think the Senate plan was a step in that direction. But again, I would agree with Donna. At this point, it's not, nothing's going to happen this year. and I think back to public opinion, you know, the frustration that you see coming out of those polls is part of, fits into a larger narrative, just with the frustration with government, government's inability to really do anything. I mean, if you know, you can look at approval numbers for Congress, and they're still in the single digits or, you know, low teens. So I think there's a lot of frustration, and obviously there's frustration with the president. There's frustration with Republicans in Congress, but I think Americans, at least coming out of that poll that you mentioned, there was a majority at 53% that did approve of the president's emergency spending bill of $3.7 billion. So I think what Americans are looking for, or at least voters are looking for, is action on this issue. And they are so frustrated with inaction on the part of Congress.
And I would add, Ben, on that, if you go back and look at polling from last summer on the Senate comprehensive reform bill, more than two-thirds of Americans actually said they supported the path that that bill took to do comprehensive immigration reform. And it's just languished for various reasons in the House of Representatives.
So once we get past the midterm elections, of course, that's a few months away here. And then but shortly after that, we'll be getting into presidential campaign mode. Could there be any time for action to happen, or is it just get delayed more?
Well, you know, that's difficult to say. Once the new Congress comes in, what happened in the Senate in 2013 will have to be done again. And that was a pretty careful compromise that was put together by this gang of eight so-called senators. Four were Republicans, four were Democrats in the Senate. And, you know, it's not clear that they would be able to move it again. But again, you know, Obama will be freed from one, his party won't have to stand for re-election while he's president because the midterms will be over. He, of course, doesn't have to either. It is something, immigration reform, that he said is one of his top priorities in his second term. There may be a renewed push there. Certainly this issue on the border with the unaccompanied minors is putting pressure on policymakers. And, you know, it remains to be seen if anything could be done then in the run-up to the 2016 presidential election. But it certainly there's a better chance in that period of time than there is in the next months before the 14 midterms.
Right. And we're talking about Marco Rubio, a person once thought and perhaps still thought of as a potential presidential material, may have lost a little of his luster in the last year or so, perhaps partly because of immigration stance.
And yeah, and if you recall when he said some, I mean, he was on the side of being for that Senate compromise. He was very criticized in the state of Iowa by certain segments of voters that would be voting in the Iowa caucuses. And he kind of moderated. He kind of, you know, didn't talk a whole lot. And we heard his comments that you played. He really had said, you know, he's kind of said, I warned you that this wasn't perfect, you know, kind of thing. So he's distanced himself from that a little bit. And part of that, I think, has been because the Republican Party as a whole has not decided that they want to proceed with comprehensive immigration reform.
And if they do, perhaps Texas Governor Rick Perry would be a person that has an opinion on that. He has been able to use his authority as governor to now bring this issue very much into his court in a way. He's recently authorized deployment of National Guard troops to the border. And he said that only 20% of those apprehended crossing the border were children, and far more were criminal aliens. Texas Governor Rick Perry.
I will not stand idly by while our citizens are under assault and little children from Central America are detained in squalor. We are too good a country for that to occur. That is why today I am using my executive authority as governor of Texas and activating the National Guard. I've directed Adjutant General John Nichols to immediately prepare for deployment up to 1,000 of his troops in support of the Department of Public Safety's ongoing surge operation. It is codenamed Operation Strong Safety all along the border region.
So Governor Rick Perry there, of course, within his authority to mobilize the National Guard. But how does this play out, that move? Not just his home state, but nationally, again, another potential Republican presidential contender for 2016. Chris Larimer.
Well, I think, you know, the move is interesting in that my understanding is that the Adjutant General Nichols is not going to allow the National Guard that have been deployed to arrest anyone. In other words, they're essentially going to be standing there along the border. And Governor Perry has asked, it's estimated that it will cost about $12 million a month. He's asked that the federal government reimburse him for that amount. I don't see that happening either. So in terms of policy, I don't know if there's going to be a large effect here. I mean, the implementation of it is quite weak. In terms of politics, he's obviously playing to a very conservative audience, right? I mean, this is an audience, if you, as Donna mentioned, if you're thinking about the Iowa caucuses or even the Ames straw poll, if that actually happens this next August. You know, this taking a tough stance like that is going to play well with those likely caucus goers or likely straw poll attendees. So if he's looking at Iowa as a way to build momentum for a presidential campaign, this is a very symbolic gesture. But in terms of actual policy and the effect, I don't see a lot of weight behind it.
Donna Hoffman.
And let's not forget, Rick Perry was in the state recently. So he obviously has his eye on the state. He is, you know, the governor of Texas, a border state where this is taking place, and he's come out with this very strong, you know, action that really is more theater or more politics, if you will, than it is actual policy at this point. Now, that could change, but as it's been reported, they're not going to be doing a lot there.
Right. And quickly, we're going to run out of time, but another person recently in Iowa, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and he said on his trip that he would consider requests made to help unaccompanied children, but that he would not encourage families to send those children to New Jersey. That trip of Christie to Iowa and a little more of a moderate approach, Donna Hoffman?
Yeah, that's kind of Christie. He you know, talked about empathy in his statements on that. And we know he's interested in running for president in 2016 as well. he will want to carve out his own ground in terms of where he stands on this particular issue and other issues. And he has done so, and that's kind of Chris Christie.
Okay, very good. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much, Donna Hoffman, Chair of Political Science at University of Northern Iowa, for being here today.
You're welcome, Ben.
And Chris Larimer, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNI. Thank you.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Catherine Perkins is the executive producer of talk shows. Technical assistance today from Dennis Reese and Tony Daner. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Stanton, in for Ben Kiefer. Thank you for joining us.